We are reading from 11th canto, 2nd chapter, verses 1 to 32. Maharaj Nimi meets the nine Yogendras. Verse 1. Sri Shuka Vacha Govinda Bhuja Guptayam Dvaravatyam Kurutvaha Avatsi Narada Pichanam Krishna Pasana Lalasa. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, eager to engage in the worship of Lord Krishna, O best of the Kurus, Narada Muni stayed for some time in Dwaraka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. Mukam karati vachala vangam langhayate girim yakupam panaham vande shikaram vimacharanam Om agyana timiran masya agyanan shalashalakaya Chakshim hitam yena tasamai shikarave maham. So before we start today's class, what do you remember from the last class? We keep reviewing and then you don't forget. Nobody remembers because Adi Purush is not here, that's why. Oh, he's hiding. Oh. You're saying your Gayatri or what? Okay, yes. By the will of Krishna, the whole Yadu dynasty was annihilated. Okay? By his disappearance, Krishna defeats Mayavad philosophy and Sahajya philosophy. I'm taking away his Yadu dynasty. He defeats Mayavad and Prakriti Sahajya. Yes?
Krishna thought about us before he left.
He thought about us before he left. Isn't that wonderful? It'd be nice to be thought of by Krishna. Actually, he's always thinking of us. The problem is we're not thinking of him. That's the problem. Parvati.
Krishna's own sons ridiculed the Vaishnavas.
Krishna's own sons ridiculed the Vaishnavas. And Krishna took them to task.
Mm-hmm. Those same Vaishnavas as agents.
Yes, yes, he took them to task. Okay, yes?
Although Krishna left the planet, Earth planet, but he's with us in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes, his Vedas remain. Although Lord Krishna left and took everything with him, he appeared again. The son of Bhagavatam has arisen. Just as the departure of Lord Krishna. Yes? Right. He took away his family because in separation they might do many mischievous acts. They might go crazy. And they're very powerful. When the powerful people go crazy, then the earth suffers. Prat Prashanta.
We also saw how we are fully in the domain of magic and
yes.
And transcendental activities of Krishna by having this curse by the Brahmanas, and suddenly there is a
Moksha.
Then the club that appears under the dress of Samba,
yeah.
And then the club it goes into the sea in small, small pieces, and it becomes, it grows. Starts growing on the bank, on the shore of the sea, as bamboos with which the Yadus will kill each other.
Yes, and the club.
So it was like unnatural events.
Unnatural events.
Meeting the laws of nature.
Yes. The word here is mushalam. If you look in text 17 and 18, you see mushala. Club. Mushala. Yeah, actually, and we have Maushala, that's something else. Maushala, of course, could be connected to the club, it could be, yeah? Okay. All right, yes. According to the Sanskrit language, it can be connected. Very good. So, yes. Okay. So the first verse begins with a wonderful word, Govinda. Govinda Bhuja Guptayam, protected by the arms of Govinda. Narada Muni stayed for some time in Dwaraka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. So in the purport, it is mentioned, in the second chapter of this canto, Bhagavad Dharma, or pure devotional service to Krishna, is explained by Narada Muni to Vasudeva, who had inquired with devotion. Narada Muni cites a conversation between King Nimi and the Jayanteyas. According to Jiva Goswami, the word abhikshanam indicates, although Narada Muni was frequently sent by Lord Krishna here and there for various pastimes, such as inquiring about the affairs of the world, Narada continuously returned to reside in Dwaraka. The word Krishna upasana lalasa indicates Narada was very eager to be near Krishna and worship him. Because of the curse of Daksha, Narada is never allowed to live continuously in one place. Sridhar Swami, however, has pointed out, Natasyam Shapade Prabhava. In Dwaraka, there is no influence of curses or other such evils, because Dwaraka is the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is always protected by his arms as shown by the word Govinda Bhuja Guptayam. Conditioned souls are struggling within the kingdom of Maya against the cruel laws of material nature, such as birth, death, old age, and disease. But if such conditioned souls have the good fortune to enter the city of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whether Dwaraka, Mathura, or Vrindavan, and live there under the direct protection of the omnipotent arms of the Supreme Lord Krishna, they will experience the unlimited transcendental bliss of real life, which is eternal and which is meant to be lived in the personal company of God. So here we are in Vrindavan, under the protection of the arms of Govinda. So are we all experiencing the unlimited transcendental bliss of real life?
Yes.
Good. And if you're not, that means you have to chant your rounds with attention, as we learned from our japa retreat. You must chant with attention because that is your quality time with Krishna when you're having your conversation with Krishna. First thing in the morning, you get up and you chant your rounds, and then you can feel as that you're in relationship with Krishna, and the rest of your day will go very nicely. So verse 2, I'll sing the Sanskrit. Ko nurajan indriyavan mukunda charanam bhujanga bhajet nabhajet savachamitya pasyam amarottamai. My dear king, in the material world, the conditioned souls are confronted by death at every step of life. Therefore, who among the conditioned souls would not render service to the lotus feet of Lord Mukunda, who is worshipable even for the greatest of liberated souls? So here we have another name of Krishna, Mukunda. It's wonderful. He's remembering Krishna, Shukadeva Goswami. So in this verse is saying, death is there at every step. So why? Who will not worship Krishna? Except, what does it say in the beginning of 10th canto? There is Atmaha.
Pashukana.
One who is killer, animal killer, or killer of the soul. So, in the last two paragraphs of this purport, there's something interesting. Sri Krishna, Lord of the blissfully variegated spiritual sky, called Vaikuntha, is always absorbed in transcendental enjoyment. In fact, Sri Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. People absorbed in materialistic enjoyment are bound by the laws of omnipresent death. But if we endeavor instead to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can immediately be connected to His Hladini Shakti, or blissful potency. If we serve Krishna under the guidance of His authorized representative, the spiritual master, we can immediately get relief from material distress. Then we shall not yearn after nothing, but instead we shall be able to relish unlimited spiritual bliss in the service of the Supreme Lord. Sarvato Mrityu indicates birth and death occur on every planet in the universe. Therefore, our so-called space travel and cosmic consciousness are useless, since there is no eternal life anywhere within the material cosmos. What is the verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that? Abrahma bhuvana loka puna avartino arjuna. In conclusion, to understand the futility of engaging in service of anything other than Krishna, and to engage instead in serving that which is eternal and full of bliss, is the highest possible development of intelligence. Although our present intelligence is narrow, being conditioned by the laws of nature, we can create unlimited good fortune for ourselves by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, learning to discriminate between that which is temporary and useless and that which is eternal and real. So what's another verse that has the Mukunda in it from Bhagavatam? But yeah? How does it start? Devarshi Bhutapna. It's a very similar idea. Prahita Kartam. So, yes. All these other debts that we have to the rishis, to the demigods, to everyone, can be all taken care of simply by worshipping Mukunda. Verse 3. One day the sage among the demigods, Narada, came to the house of Vasudeva. After worshipping Narada with suitable paraphernalia, seating him comfortably and respectfully bowing down to him, Vasudeva spoke as follows. Shri Vasudeva said, "My lord, your visit, like that of a father to his children, is for the benefit of all living beings. You especially help the most wretched among them, as well as those who are advanced on the path toward the Supreme Lord, Uttama Shloka." Good news for us that he helps the most wretched and also those who are advanced. So purport, Vasudeva herein describes the glories of Narada Muni. The words Kripananam Yatapitror Uttamashloka Vartmanam are significant. Kripananam refers to the most wretched persons, whereas Uttamashloka Vartmanam refers to the most fortunate, those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness. Who else is we heard about in Srimad Bhagavatam, who is the friend of the most wretched and the guru of the most advanced? Lord Shiva, yes, Lord Shiva. Remember that Daksha Yajna. Sridhar Swami has stated, Tata Bhagavad Rupasya Bhavato Yatra Sarvadehinam Swastaya Iti. The word Bhagavad Rupasya indicates Narada Muni is an expansion of the Supreme Lord, and his activities therefore bring immense benefit for all living beings. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is described as a manifestation of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is stated, Narada is especially empowered to give instructions in the art of devotional service to Krishna. Narada is especially able to advise the conditioned souls how they can dovetail their present activities with devotional service of Krishna without unnecessarily disrupting their present life. Now we'll go to the purport end of paragraph 2. One who receives a great treasure but can neither use it himself nor dedicate it to the happiness of others is called a miser. Therefore, a person who leaves this world without having understood his actual position as servant of God is called a kripana or miser. Kripana falahitava, Bhagavad Gita says, that his fruit is useless fruit. The fruit of a miser is he's wasted his life. So actually someone left their body either today or yesterday, one of our devotees here.
Haripriya.
Haripriya. Yeah, so you know this old lady who has this little walker in front of the temple and sells books?
Oh, from Venezuela.
Yeah.
She's from Venezuela.
She left her body. Yeah, yesterday, I guess it was.
I saw her a few days ago.
Yeah. So death is there at every step. I mean, we just saw her also a few days ago, and there. And I heard her departure was very glorious.
Yeah, she was chanting the Gayatri.
She was chanting Gayatri, and somebody went to check on her in the morning. She was okay. Mm-hmm. When they came back, she had left, and she had a beautiful smile on her face, and she had just left like that. Yeah, so what happened, her story was, she came here as an old lady to distribute Prabhupada's books. And what
was marathon or not?
Yeah, day and night, rain or shine. And so then what happened, one night I think she was beat up. She was attacked by some miscreants, some gundas, and they stole her 300 rupees for the day. And she was left with a broken hip, and then she got surgery, and then she continued her book distribution with a walker. Mm-hmm. And every day, she was there, out in front of the Samadhi, distributing books.
Ramachari takes care of her.
Yeah.
Also from the country.
Yeah. Yeah, many devotees were taking care of her. Dinabandhu Radhakund Mataji. And during Prabhupada's marathon, she left her body, the book distribution marathon. And so we just heard that news today, or yesterday, I can't remember anyway. So therefore, we should follow her example. Don't be a miser. She used everything in Krishna's service, even though, what does she have? She has no money, she has no beauty, she's an old lady. But she just did what she could, what simple service for Krishna she could do.
Yeah. When I heard that some people had beaten her up, I could only think, oh my God, what will happen
to those people, yeah, like Haridas Thakur distributing books. And so it's a very nice example that here we have. Bhagavatam is very practical, and our process is a very practical process. So we can take inspiration from this very simple old lady who left her body.
Yeah.
Okay, so let us go on. We're in verse 4 of the purport, paragraph 3. This verse states that Narada Muni is so empowered in devotional service of Krishna, he can lift even miserly rascals out of their illusion, just as a kind father goes to his child and wakes him from a distressing nightmare. When will we all wake up? Krishna is waiting. Prabhupada is waiting for us to wake up. Our present materialistic life is just like a troublesome dream from which great souls such as Narada can wake us. Narada Muni is so powerful that even those already advanced in devotional service to Krishna can greatly enhance their spiritual position by hearing his instructions, as they will be given here in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So whether you think you're the most wretched or whether you think you're very advanced, you will benefit by these instructions of Narada Muni. In 11th canto. Therefore, Sri Narada is the guru and father of all living beings who are originally devotees of the Lord, but who are now artificially attempting to enjoy the material world, material bodies of human beings, animals, and so on. So here is the vision of the Uttama Adhikari, that all living beings are devotees originally. So tomorrow we will hear more in these questions by King Nimi and the answers. He wants to know about devotees. So we will hear about the three categories of devotees tomorrow, the Uttama, the Madhyama, and the Kanishta, in the answers of the Navayogendras. Verse 5, the activities of the demigods lead to both misery and happiness for living beings, but the activities of great saints like you who have accepted the infallible Lord as their very soul result only in the happiness of all beings. So therefore, don't take shelter of the demigods. You will get mixed results. But if you take shelter of the devotees, you will get everything. Okay, purport, paragraph 2. Oh, yes, we won't read this whole thing, but it's very nice. It's stated here, great saintly persons like Narada Muni are always merciful to all living beings. Tatikshava Karanika Suhida Savadehinam Majata Shatava Santa Sadhava Sadhubhushana. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he's tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. Does anybody know somebody like that? Bhakti Rasamrit Maharaj. Oh, okay. We are coming into our present modern age.
World.
All the devotees and help Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness all over the world.
Yes. That's a good description of you.
Let's go on with the purport. A sadhu is described above as a devotee of the Lord. His concern, therefore, is to enlighten people in devotional service to the Lord. That is his mercy. Prabhupada said, a devotee, this is Prabhupada speaking now. He's quoting Prabhupada's purport 3.25.21. I won't read all, but I'll just read because it's so beautiful. A devotee travels all over the country door-to-door preaching. Be Krishna conscious. Be a devotee of Lord Krishna. Don't spoil your life simply fulfilling your animal propensities. Human life is meant for self-realization, Krishna consciousness. These are the preachings of a sadhu. He's not satisfied with his own liberation. He always thinks about others. He's the most compassionate personality toward all the fallen souls. So then he talks about Karunika. When you preach, people may mistreat you. You have to be tolerant. You have to be merciful. You're not prepared to receive the knowledge. They don't like it. Prabhupada said that is their disease. Sadhu has the thankless task of impressing upon them the importance of devotional service. Sometimes devotees are personally attacked with violence. But he's very compassionate. Yesterday, again, I was reminded of the departure of Sachisukta Prabhu, a Russian in the Siberian labor camp. That he was very, very sick because they didn't. All they had to eat was like this black bread or something. I don't know. And he had tuberculosis. He had diseases, all kind of diseases. So, on his last day, he had a cellmate, which later told the devotees that how he left. He said he asked his cellmate, "You please shave my head and leave a little piece in the back." So he shaved his head, and then. And he took the sheet and wrapped it around him like a dhoti. And he took a magazine and cut it up and put like a mala around him, around his neck. He took toothpaste and put on tilak. And then he sat and he started chanting. And he was with a big smile on his face. And then his cellmate went away. And when he came back, he saw him still like sitting, chanting on I don't know what, but because they didn't have beads. And then he touched him. And then he just fell over. He had left his body like that. So these are great souls. This is the salted bread. This was salted bread. And, you know, in the story, Sachisukta. Sachisukta Prabhu. So these, and he was just trying to help preach. He was just trying to help others. And he had to tolerate so much. And so here it says, Prabhupada says, he's not only a well-wisher of human society, but a well-wisher of animal society as well. Here it is said, Sarvadehinam, which indicates all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Not only does a human being have a material body, but other living entities, we know that. The devotee of the Lord is merciful to everyone, cats, dogs, trees. Prabhupada was merciful to the spiders in Radha Damodar Temple. He was merciful to all living entities. Shivananda Sen gave liberation to a dog by treating the dog transcendentally. There are many instances where a dog got salvation by association with a sadhu. Now, there's a dog in Ireland, Tilak, who ran away from his owner and joined the devotees. He joined the ashram. So there are examples. So this is the mercy of the devotee. He doesn't discriminate between even people and animals. So Prabhupada continues, all these characteristics are prominent in a devotee. A devotee develops all the good qualities of the demigods, whereas a non-devotee, even though academically qualified, has no actual good qualification or good characteristics according to the standards of transcendental realization. Okay. So Vishwanath comments, it is improper to compare the devotees with the demigods. Sometimes the demigods give too much rain, and in this way, afflict the living beings. Okay. The demigods are not so merciful. Now, here's the verse that I was talking about earlier this morning. Those who worship the demigods receive reciprocation from the demigods in a way just corresponding to the offering. The demigods are attendants of karma, like a person's shadow. But sadhus are actually merciful to the fallen. So the devotees, they can change your karma. This is the point. And in the purport, 11.2.6. That's a very wonderful verse. So in the purport, he explains that demigods have to give you according to your karma. So whatever your chart says when you're born, then the demigods have to follow that. But the devotees don't have to follow it. They don't have to follow, they don't have to consult your chart and say, okay, well, according to your chart, it says this, 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 so therefore I give you this, this, this. No. Devotees don't look at your chart. They just give you the holy name and give you blessings to go beyond your chart. When you come to the level of chanting Namabhas, then the planets can no longer have influence on you. And so this is the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, why are we here? We have to go beyond our conditioning. We have to. We have to get to the level of spiritual beings, or servants of Krishna. Here it says, in the fourth canto, Bhagavatam, Prita Maharaj states, even the demigods are subject to punishment by the Lord if they deviate from his laws. On the other hand, devotees of the Lord like Narada Muni, by their potent preaching, can interfere in the karma of a living being by persuading him to give up his fruitive activity and mental speculation and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So isn't that an interesting sentence, that devotees are interfering with the karma of people? Whenever you preach to someone and tell them, surrender to Krishna, give up all this nonsense, I mean, just chant the holy name, you're interfering, you're changing their karma. They don't have to follow their karma anymore. Beautiful verse is quoted from Brahma Samhita. Yastvindagapa matavinda maho sakarma vantanurupa falabhajana matanati karmani nirhati kindu shabhakti bhajam govindamari purishantamaham vachami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns to the root all the fruit of activities of those imbued with devotion. For those who walk the path of work, no less for Indra, king of the demigods, and for the tiny insect Indragopa, he impartially ordains the due enjoyments of the fruits of activities in accordance with the chain of works previously performed. So even the demigods, they have to follow karma, but a pure devotee burns to ashes all traces of karma, not only for himself, but for everyone who comes in contact with him. So that is the power of the pure devotee. Narada Muni is being glorified. And let us hear what question Vasudev is going to ask to Narada Muni. In verse 7, O Brahmana, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I still wish to inquire about those duties which give pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any mortal who faithfully hears about them is freed from all kinds of fear. So, what a wonderful question. I want to know what will please Krishna. What kind of thing can I do to make Krishna happy? And so many verses are going to come now and in Uddhava Gita. This is pleasing to Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, we don't hear so much, except Krishna tells, okay, please give me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water. But here we're going to hear a lot of verses. This will please Krishna. This will please. This is pleasing to me. This I like. So it's very wonderful that is his question. What will please you? How can I please you? How can I please Krishna? Purport. Now there's something behind this. We'll hear that later. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Narada Muni might have been reluctant to instruct Vasudeva because of natural respect for Vasudeva's exalted position as the father of Krishna. Narada might have thought, since Vasudeva is already perfect in Krishna consciousness, there is no need to instruct him in the process of devotional service. Therefore, anticipating Narada's possible reluctance, Vasudeva specifically requested Narada to preach to him about devotional service to Krishna. This is a symptom of a pure devotee. The pure devotee of Krishna never considers himself exalted. To the contrary, he meekly feels his devotional service is most important, but that somehow or other, Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, is accepting such imperfect service. His devotional service is most imperfect. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stated, Chanadapi sunichena taradapi sahishtina manina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. One can chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, feeling himself lower than the straw on the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respect to others. Such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name constantly. So verse 8, Vasudev speaking. In a previous birth on this earth, I worshipped the Supreme Lord Ananta, who alone can award liberation, but because I desired to have a child, I did not worship him for liberation. Thus, I was bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy. So behind this question is Vasudev's anxiety. What is his anxiety that is behind this question. Nila Shuka?
He wants to attend the marriage.
No? Yeah, that's one anxiety. There's another one. It's in the purport, actually. Yeah? Krishna is going to disappear. That was his thing. He says that I didn't get liberation. Okay, you didn't, but so what? It's because Krishna is going to leave. Now there's no time. The time is up. Now the time is up. Krishna is going to leave, and I didn't worship him. Of course he didn't. He was your son. Krishna didn't want to. He tried worshiping him a few times, and then Krishna expands his Lila Shakti, you know, when after Krishna and Balaram saved him from Kamsa, then Devaki and Vasudeva wanted to worship Krishna, but Krishna expanded so that they would forget his power and just accept as their son. And so here, according to Shri Daswami, the word Kila, meaning indeed it is true, it is said, as is well known, indicates Vasudeva was remembering the words the Lord had spoken to him when the Lord had appeared as four-armed Vishnu in the prison of Kamsa. So Jiva Goswami states, from the anxiety of Vasudev, expressed in this verse by the words Apujayam Namokshaya Mohito Deva Mayaya, it is to be discerned. Vasudev heard of the curse of the Brahmanas at Pindaraka against the Yadu dynasty, and he could understand from this curse the Lord's disappearance from the earth was imminent. Vasudev understood the Lord's manifest pastimes within this universe were coming to an end. He now lamented he had not directly taken advantage of the opportunity to worship Krishna, to go back home, back to Godhead. So again, down to paragraph 3, same thing. Vasudeva lamented he had desired Krishna to come to him as a son instead of desiring to go back to Krishna, back to Godhead, to serve the Lord in the spiritual sky. And then he quotes from Prabhupada in the 10th canto that it's we shouldn't try to bring Krishna here to become our son, better to go back to Godhead. Chant Hare Krishna. So at the end, it says, by chanting Hare Krishna, we gradually develop our eternal relationship with the Lord and attain the perfection called Sarup Siddhi. We should take advantage of this benediction and go back home, back to Godhead. Of course, Vasudev already had Sarup Siddhi, but he was very humble. He was a humble devotee, and he was inquiring for our benefit as well. My dear Lord, you are always true to your vow. Please instruct me clearly, so by your mercy I may easily free myself from material existence, which is full of many dangers and keeps us constantly bound in fear. Last paragraph of the purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the words Vishvatobayat indicates Vasudeva very much feared the curse of the Brahmanas. So why he keeps talking about fear? It's because of the curse. As one can become perfect by worshipping the Vaishnavas, by displeasing the Vaishnavas, one can bring about all misfortune. So Vasudeva feared the curse delivered by the Brahmanas at Pindaraka Tirtha. And tomorrow, when we hear the highest good, we'll hear a lot of verses tomorrow, very famous verses. And one of the most famous verses is about fear and why what is the root cause of fear. We'll hear about that tomorrow in the answers of the Navayugendras. Verse 10, Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, Devarshi Narada was pleased by the questions of the highly intelligent Vasudeva, because they suggested the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They reminded Narada of Lord Krishna. Thus Narada replied to Vasudeva as follows. Just like Shukadeva was pleased with Parikshit, Varya Neshate Prashna, your questions are glorious. So Narada is pleased. The devotees are happy when they get questions like this. How to please Krishna? How to get free from this material existence? The devotees are happy to hear intelligent questions, not foolish questions. So verse 11, Shri Narada said, O best of the sattvatas, you have quite correctly asked about the eternal duty of the living entity toward the Supreme Lord. Such devotional service to the Lord is so potent that its performance can purify the entire universe. End of that purport. Narada will now answer Vasudeva's inquiry about the process of devotional service. Later, at the end of their conversation, he'll reply to Vasudeva's comments about Vasudeva's own faulty intentions, about having Krishna as a son instead of worshipping him. Verse 12, pure devotional service, Haribo. This is the essence of Bhagavatam. Rendered to the Supreme Lord is spiritually so potent that simply by hearing about such transcendental service, by chanting its glories in response, by meditating on it, by respectfully and faithfully accepting it, or by praising devotional service of others. Even persons who hate the demigods and all other living beings can be immediately purified. Well, I bet that people who hate the demigods aren't going to do these things. But if they were to do these things, then they will get purified. People who hate the demigods. Who are these people who hate the demigods? I don't know. I guess the demons.
Maybe those who are in the beginning, if you just come to the devotional service.
Yeah. 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 Those who hate the demigods. Oh, it means the demons. The demons.
And
those.
All other living beings. Hate everybody.
Hate everybody. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And all other living beings. Well, that includes. Oh, they hate everyone. I guess there are people like that. Okay. But if such people hear about devotional service, they will be purified. Or chant, meditate, accept. Or praise the devotional service of others. Paragraph 2 of the purport. Neither ordinary materialistic yoga processes meant for achieving mystic powers nor impersonal process based on speculation have the power to purify immediately those who have fallen into sinful behavior. Sad dharma or Bhagavad dharma, pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God, it is unique in that even the most fallen souls can immediately rise to the highest perfectional stage by surrendering at the lotus feet of Krishna or his pure devotee. This was demonstrated in the preaching work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in the case of the sinful brothers Jagaya Madhai, and this was demonstrated in the preaching work of Srila Prabhupada, who delivered so many Jagais and Madhais from fallen life. Just imagine what we would have become if we had not met the devotees. Where would we be now?
Lost.
Probably dead or crazy. Or who knows where we would be right now. 13. Today you have made me remember my Lord, the supremely blissful personality of Godhead, Narayan. Supreme Lord is so auspicious. Whoever hears and chants about him becomes completely pious. So Narada is in ecstasy with the questions of Vasudev. He's really happy. Now this purport we will read. This is a very interesting purport for us. There's a sentence near the end which we'll meditate on. Sri Jiva Goswami has stated, Narayanas tadishadharme madhya guru rupo Narayan nar ishi. Narayan ishi. The word Narayana in this verse refers to the incarnation of Godhead, Narayana Rishi, who acted as Narada's spiritual master in this dharma. Sri Jiva Goswami has also pointed out, Smarita iti Krishna pasana veshena tasyapi vismaranat. The word smarita, he is brought back to memory, indicates because of Narada's absorption and worship of Krishna, he had forgotten Lord Narayan. That's his worshipable deity. So Narada, his guru is Narayan in the Bhadrikashrama, his associate. In other words, if intense engagement, here's the important sentence, if intense engagement in devotional service makes one sometimes forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by Krishna's arrangement, such a sincere servitor will again be reminded of the Personality of Godhead. So do we sometimes forget Krishna in the midst of our devotional service? Do we sometimes forget Krishna, even though we're doing devotional service to Krishna? So, Parvati said, do we sometimes remember Krishna when we're doing our devotions? That's very good. Yes. Do we sometimes remember while we're chanting our japa? that's probably the better question. Do we sometimes remember Krishna in our day? Yes. So now we are actually trying in this class to remember Krishna. But here, Narada Muni forgot Narayana Rishi because he was worshipping Krishna. Now, that's not such a bad thing to do. Well, we might have our Ishtadev, whoever that may be, and we may forget our Ishtadev when we are doing our devotional service. So, if we forget, don't worry, Krishna will remember us. When I had my near death, I forgot everything, even who I was, but Krishna didn't forget. So the holy name was there. Verse 14, to explain the devotional service of the Lord, sages have related the ancient history of the conversation between the great soul King Videha and the sons of Rishabdev. Itihasam Puratanam, ancient historical account. These words come a lot in Bhagavatam. Itihasam Puratanam, with the story of Ajamila. Itihasam Puratanam, an ancient story. Ajamila in Canto 6 was another very ancient story. So here's another ancient story. This history of Bhagavatam goes back billions of years. So we don't know when this actually happened. It could have been billions of years ago that this conversation took place. But it is so amazing that here we are in Kali Yuga in the 21st century, I think, and we're hearing this conversation of billions of years ago between King Nimi. I mean, you can figure it out. When was the birth of King Nimi, since you're an astrologer? But I don't know. It's probably not worth figuring. So here, these are significant. Srimad Bhagavatam is Nigama Kalpa Tarorgalitam Phalam, ripe fruit of desire tree of Vedic knowledge. Pages of Bhagavatam, we find true historical narrations relating to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and liberation of the conditioned souls. So imagine our history. They cannot even, the historian, modern historians cannot even imagine such a history. Such a history of billions of years. And it's a history, here it says, not only of this universe, but also the spiritual world. If one seriously studies Bhagavatam, he becomes the most learned intellectual man. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desires all pious persons become highly learned, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and then preach the glories of the Lord in a scientific way all over the world. But we must hear with complete faith and submission. And then, according to verse 12, even if our former life is filled with abominable activities, simply by hearing Bhagavatam, we'll be promoted to the same transcendental status as the Lord and His pure devotees. Yes. Then he goes into the uselessness of modern history, which we all probably know. And we're going to hear this perfect history, and it's going to start way back with Swayambhuva Manu. In verse 15, Swayambhuva Manu had a son named Maharaj Priyavrat. Among Priyavrata's sons was Agnidra. From Agnidra was born Nabi, whose son was known as Rishabdev. Rishabdev is accepted as an expansion of the Supreme Lord Vasudev. He incarnated in this world to propagate those religious principles that lead living entities to ultimate liberation. He had 100 sons, all perfect in Vedic knowledge. Of the 100 sons of Lord Rishabdev, the eldest Bharata was completely devoted to Lord Narayan. It is because of Bharata's fame that this planet is now celebrated as the great Bharat Varsha. King Bharata rejected this material world, considering all types of material pleasure temporary and useless. Leaving his beautiful young wife and family, he worshipped Lord Hari by severe austerities and attained the abode of the Lord after 3 lifetimes. 9 of the remaining sons of Rishabdev became the rulers of the 9 islands of Bharatavarsh. They exercised complete sovereignty over this planet. 81 sons became twice-born Brahmins and helped initiate the Vedic path of fruit of sacrifice, Karmakanda. Purport. The 9 dweeps are islands ruled by 9 sons of Rishabdev of the 9 Varshas of Jambudvip, namely Bharat, Kinnara, Hari, Kuru, Hiranmai, Ramyaka, Ilavrita, Bhadrashva, and Ketumala. The 9 remaining sons of Rishab were greatly fortunate sages who worked vigorously to spread knowledge of the Absolute Truth. They wandered about naked and were very well versed in spiritual sciences. Their names were Kavi, Havir, Antariksha, Prabhuta, Pipalayana, Avirhotra, Dumila, Chamasa, and Kara Bhajana. Now, do you all have this flip chart, this paper of the second chapter? Everybody has this? So now we will go to this. Do we have any more copies here? Raise your hand. One. You don't have? Okay. We have one more copy here. Okay. Prashanta doesn't have. Do we have any more there? Number 2. So many things are there. Okay. Prashanta didn't get a copy. Oh, you got. Prashanta got a copy. We are happy. So we will study this. This is the purport of 11.2.20-21. Now, in the purport, it's kind of separated, the questions and the answers, so I put them together in the flip chart so it makes it easier for you to see. You have the questions, and then at the end you have the answers. So then on this chart you have it together. So the first one, these are 9 questions. The first one we will hear tomorrow. What is the highest good? And that will be answered by Kavi. And of course, the highest good is devotional service, pure devotional service. And we'll hear wonderful verses all about devotional service in its different stages, in asakti and prema and bhava. We'll hear different descriptions. And we'll hear the beginning of bhayam dvitiya abhinivesita syat, that why are we fearful in this world? What is the cause of fear, and how devotional service will free us from that fear? That will be answered tomorrow by Kavi. And then tomorrow also we will hear in the second class, what are the religious principles, dharma, natural proclivities, sabhava, behavior, achar, speech, vakya, and outward symptoms, lakshana, of Bhagavata, a Vaishnava devotee of the Lord. Not only will we hear about the pure devotee, we'll hear about the madhyama, and we'll hear about the kanishta, their symptoms, their behavior, and their natural, their religious principles. As that'll be tomorrow afternoon. Then, day after tomorrow, Burijan will explain Maya. What is the external energy of Vishnu? Question 3. And Antariksha will be answering. Javier will be answering tomorrow. Antariksha will be answering in the 3rd chapter. And then the next question, Burijan will also be discussing how you can become liberated, dissociated from Maya. Prabuddha will be answering. Then the 5th question, what is the true identity of Brahman? Pipalayana, and Burijan will also discuss that. Then I'll pick it up on question 6 on karma, 3 types of karma, avihotra. The pastimes, also I will do avatars, and the bada jiva, what is the aim or destination of one who is against the Lord, chamasa, and also the incarnations. Yuga avatars will be my class next week. So karabhajana. So you can keep this as a reference, and so you can follow. The first question is about devotional service, the highest good. The second is about the devotee. 3rd is about Maya. 4th is about liberation, how to get liberation. 5 is about Brahman. 6 is about karma. 7, avatars. 8 is the Buddha Jiva. And 9 is the Yuga avatars. Okay. So there you have it. The whole summary of the first 5, the 2nd through 5th chapter, all the questions of the Navayogendras. Now we will go. I have something here, a little note from, I can't remember his name, one of our students. Arjuna asks, and Krishna describes the symptoms of sthita pragya. This is a connection to Bhagavad Gita, 2:54-72, where Arjuna is asking, you know, what are the symptoms of a sthita pragya? So here's like the same, similar question by Maharaj Nimi to the Navayogendras, what are the symptoms of a devotee? That will be one of the questions. So verse 22, we're going to hear about the Navayogendras a little bit. These sages wandered the earth, seeing the entire universe with all its gross and subtle objects as a manifestation of the Supreme Lord and as non-different from the self. Wow. So in the paragraph 3 of the purport, one may therefore ask why the living entity and the Lord are stated to be non-different from the material universe. This question is nicely answered by Narada Muni in 1st Canto 1:5:20. Idam hi vishvam bhagavan nivetaro yato jagatstana nirotasam bhava. Supreme Lord, personality of Godhead, is himself this cosmos, still he is aloof from it. From him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In him it rests, and onto him it enters after annihilation. Commenting on Narada's statement, Srila Prabhupada has explained this delicate philosophical point, which we're going to be hearing again and again through this canto, how to see everything, Krishna in everything, and everything in Krishna. For a pure devotee, the conception of Mukunda, Lord Shri Krishna, is both personal and impersonal. The impersonal cosmic situation is also Mukunda because it is the emanation of the energy of Mukunda. This is Prabhupada speaking. For example, a tree is a complete unit, whereas the leaves and branches of the tree are emanated parts and parcels of the tree. The leaves and branches of the tree are also the tree. The tree itself is neither the leaves nor the branches. The Vedic version that the whole cosmic creation is nothing but Brahman means, since everything is emanating from the Supreme Brahman, nothing is apart from him. Similarly, the part and parcel hands and legs are called the body, but the body as the whole unit is neither the hands nor the legs. The Lord is a transcendental form of eternity, cognition, and beauty. Thus the creation of the energy of the Lord appears to be partially eternal, full of knowledge, and beautiful. And so, this is a very nice theme of the 11th canto. I'll go to the last paragraph of this huge purport, pages and pages. It should be noted, in this verse, the word sada-sad-atma-kam, made up of gross and subtle objects, does not refer to material and spiritual objects. So often we hear sad, sat and asat. And sat means spiritual, asat means material. But in this case, sada-sad-atma-kam means gross and subtle. So we have to notice these little subtle Sanskrit terms. Sometimes sad and asat can mean gross and subtle. This universe is stated to be composed of sat and asat, gross and subtle material objects. According to Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the very subtle state within the manifest world is known as the unmanifest. And the realm beyond the manifest world is called the transcendental. Within the covering surrounding the manifest in the region of the time factor is the phase of material existence experienced by the controlling deities. In this phase exist the two functions, cause, asat, and effect, sat. So here's another meaning of sat and asat. Effect and sat is the effect and asat is the cause. In the universe, which is a third tattva or reality, apart from and containing both sat and asat, and which is a form of the Lord, it is impossible to produce any contradiction to the non-dual absolute truth. So this is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Figure it out. Okay, in other words, although ignorant materialistic scientists may zealously carry out research to find a material principle that can negate or render unnecessary the existence of God, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati clearly states, since the universe is an emanation from the Lord, and therefore spiritually identical with him, there cannot possibly exist anywhere within the universe a material law, principle, or phenomenon that in any way contradicts the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. In fact, the entire universe, along with the spiritual sky, exists as eternal testimony to the unlimited glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. With this understanding, the nine Yogendras were traveling about the earth in transcendental bliss. And therefore, Prabhupada encouraged the scientists who were devotees to prove that Krishna is God. Through your science, you should prove that there is a Supreme Lord. And now it's happening. This new theory, what do they call it? I don't remember it now. In America and the West. That there is a intelligent design. Intelligent design. Intelligent design means intelligence. Intelligence means person. That there is an intelligent designer. If there is intelligent design, there must be intelligent designer. If there are material laws, there must be a law maker. And so finally, it's happening with the scientists. So, which I would give credit to our devotee scientists. It's interesting, this same theory that they're saying now, I was just reading something that Sariputta wrote 20 years ago, which he said basically the same thing. 20 years ago, in one of his little papers, or somewhere, he was saying that same thing about intelligent design. And now they've picked it up and given their name to the theory. But it's good. It's really good. Good news. So verse 23, the nine Yogendras are liberated souls who travel freely to the planets of the demigods, the perfected mystics, the sadhyas, heavenly musicians, yakshas, human beings, and minor demigods such as kinnaras and serpents. No mundane force can check their free movement, and exactly as they wish, they can travel as well to the worlds of the sages, angels, ghostly followers of Lord Shiva, Vidyadharas, Brahmanas, and cows. Okay, We have a lot of planets here. I think, why don't we just do a review of the fifth canto here? Demigods, Swargaloka. Okay, perfected mystics, what's the name of their planet? Siddhaloka. Siddhaloka. Sadhyas, Sadhyaloka. Heavenly musicians, Gandharva. Yakshas, that's where Kuvera is. We're hearing that in Bhagavatam. Kailash. Okay, Yakshas. Human beings, we know. We don't worry. Minor demigod. Kinnaras, where do they live?
Himalayas.
Huh? Kim Purusha, very good. No, they're in Jambudweep. They're in one of the nine Varshas. And he remembered. Kim Purusha, Varsha. Okay, Kinnaras, serpents.
Naga.
Yeah, which planet?
Nagaloka.
Nagaloka. Which? Which one? Mahatala. Okay, Mahatala, to be specific. We are locating. See, this is, he's like, if you want to be a world traveler, you have to know where you're going. So here we have a world traveler. The nine yogendras are traveling throughout the universe. And we should also know this geography. I mean, history and geography. So we have to learn little geography also today in our class. Okay, now who else do we have here? The sages. Tapa, Jana, Mahar. Jana, Mahar, Jana, Tapa, Satya. That's for the sages. And also, there's another place, the seven sages, where do they live? Sapta, yeah, Sapta Rishi Loka. Yeah. The angels. They are the Apsaras, I would say. Yeah, Swarga. They will be in Swarga. Swarga Loka. Okay, the ghostly followers of Lord Shiva. Buvar. Yes, Buvar. They're in between. They're the in-between places for these ghostly people. Vidyadharas, they have their loka. The brahmanas and the cows are here. Yeah, Goloka. There is a Goloka in the material world as well. There is a Goloka, cow planet, where Surabhi's descendants, and perhaps Surabhi comes every once in a while to see them. Okay, so we have traveled now with the sages, the nine yogendras. We have traveled throughout the universe. Now we're going to start the story. Once in Ajanaba, the former name of the earth. So before Bharatvarsha, it used to be called Ajanaba. Why was it called Ajanaba? Let's review our Bhagavatam studies. Who knows? Ajanaba. Who was Ajanaba? He was a king. I know he's a king, but which king? Ajanaba. Okay, you can research for us. Was he the father of... Nabi? Was he one of those sons of Priyavrata? Did we just read those sons? I don't think so. Ajanaba. Who is Ajanaba? We should find out. Came upon the sacrificial performance of the great soul Maharajnimi, which was being carried out under the direction of elevated sages. For some reason, I'm thinking of fifth canto for this name.
Yeah, because of the reign of King Nabi, that's why
it's Nabi. Okay, it's from Nabi. Okay, Ajanaba. So it's the family of Rishabdev. Ajanaba.
There were two Nabis.
Let's not confuse things. We're talking about the one who was the father of Rishabdev. Okay. My dear king, seeing those pure devotees of the Lord who rival the sun in brilliance, everyone present, performer of the sacrifice, the brahmanas, even the sacrificial fires, stood in respect. Okay. Those were the days when the fires stood in respect. King Videha Nimi understood the nine sages were exalted devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, overjoyed at their auspicious arrival, he offered them suitable sitting places and worshipped them in a proper way, just as one would worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We'll go to the end of purport of 26. It's a huge, every purport is huge because it's his first book and he wanted to make everyone realize that You know, there's so much knowledge. Only 4 chapters in this volume here. So many purports, big, huge purports. Okay, end of the purport. A Vaishnava's worship of the Lord's representative is not self-serving or opportunistic, but is an expression of eternal love for the Lord and his representatives, as indicated here by the word prita. Therefore, it is clear from this verse not only the 9 exalted sons of Rishabhdev, also King Nimi himself are all great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in defiance of the artificial limited concept of impersonalism. Okay? 27. Overwhelmed by transcendental joy, the king humbly bowed his head and then proceeded to question the 9 sages. So this is, these 9 great souls glowed with their own effulgence and thus appeared equal to the 4 Kumaras, the sons of Lord Brahma. So sacrifices, those sacrifices they used to do in the old days are very wonderful. You don't know who might appear in your sacrifice. Narada Muni, he was appearing sometimes in the sacrifice of Vasudev. And now these 9 Navayogendras appeared in King Nimi's sacrifice. Kumaras appeared to Prithu. And even the Supreme Lord himself would come in the sacrifice. So we'll look at the purport after the quote. It has already been described in many ways the Navayogendras were pure devotees of the Lord. Being completely Krishna-conscious souls, they naturally radiated the intense effulgence of the soul, as indicated here by the word swarucha. And sometimes the non-devotees would appreciate Srila Prabhupada when he came to the airport, and they would appreciate how brilliant and shining he was. They would comment on that. And devotees, when the first time they would see Prabhupada too, they would comment on how effulgent he was. Shridhar Swami has also pointed out the word Brahmaputra Paman, meaning equal to the sons of Brahma, indicates the Navayogendras were on the same spiritual platform as the 4 exalted Kumara brothers. It has been described in 4th canto, Maharaj Prithu received the 4 Kumaras with great love and reverence, and here King Nimi is similarly receiving the 9 sons of Lord Rishabhdev. Receiving exalted Vaishnavas with love and reverence is standard spiritual etiquette for those who desire progress and happiness in life. So here is the lesson in a positive way. In the last chapter, we heard the lesson in a negative way. Don't offend the Vaishnavas. Now we are seeing the example of Vasudev worshipping Narada and the example of Nimi worshipping Navayogendras. King Videha said, "I think you must be direct associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is famous as the enemy of the demon, Madhu. Indeed, the pure devotees of Lord Vishnu wander throughout the universe not for their personal selfish interest, but to purify all the conditioned souls." You're so fortunate when you meet a pure devotee because they're not forced to travel by karma. Everyone else is forced to wander from one body to another, this here and there, but they wander freely. Only they are free. Only they choose their destination freely. They can wander everywhere. And so if you see them, then it's such an auspicious opportunity. Purport. King Nimi here welcomes the great sages by glorifying the transcendental activities. It is well known the Supreme Personality of God, it is transcendental to the 3 modes of material nature, stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mam Ebhya Param Avyayam. Similarly, his pure devotees are also on the transcendental platform. One may ask how such transcendental living beings as associates of Lord Vishnu could be seen within the material world. Therefore, it is stated here, Pavanaya Charantihi, the associates of Lord Vishnu travel throughout the universe to reclaim the fallen conditioned souls on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so it's just like the prison house and the prisoner. Similarly, the devotees called Parivrajakacharyas wander throughout the universe, inviting everyone to surrender to Lord Krishna, go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Okay, then at the end, even the most ignorant members of human society, even though the ignorant members of human society are not interested in approaching the servants of Lord Vishnu, devotees of the Lord without any false prestige act to liberate the conditioned souls from their perpetual misfortune. And it's still going on today that I just met for the first time Chandrasekhar Prabhu, the head of the prison ministry. So we think we're in prison. There are people who are in prison in the prison of this world, and he's doing this service for the last 20 years of reaching these people who are in prison, and they're so grateful to get the mercy of the devotees is going everywhere. Even Srila Prabhupada, he preached in the prison of India, some Tihar prison or somewhere, that he wanted to give this mercy. And Haridas Thakur, he was in the prison, and he was preaching to the prisoners that better you stay here. They didn't like that. They didn't like that. Because if you go out, then you'll fall into Maya. And now you're safe. Okay, anyway, yes. The mercy of the devotee extends everywhere, even to the lowest. Verse 29.
Some devotees in Malaysia, they work in the drug rehabilitation centers.
Drug rehabilitation centers. Oh, that's... Yeah, Prabhupada wanted that, actually. Prabhupada wanted that the devotees help everyone. In fact, he was preaching to the police chief of one of the police chiefs in the Chicago police force. He was asking actually for the city hall of Evanston from the mayor, but the mayor was saying, no, actually, you know, we need the city hall, you know, where they have the government. But Prabhupada, he said, you know, you just give us a place and we will reform all these people by the holy name. The drug addicts and the prisoners, we will reform them. That was in Chicago. That is in America, Chicago, Illinois. There's a conversation with the police chief, and then there's also another with the mayor of Evanston, where we had our temple, where he was asking. There was a building, a vacant building, and that building was meant to be for the city government, and Prabhupada said, why don't you give us that building? He went to the mayor in the conversation. And the mayor said, well, actually, we need that building for our government. And Prabhupada said, you should give it to us, and then we will solve all your problems. He was very, very strong preacher. Verse 29, for the conditioned soul's human body is most difficult to achieve, and it can be lost at any moment. But I think that even those who have achieved human life rarely gain the association of pure devotees who are dear to the Lord of Vaikuntha. So everyone in this room is very fortunate. Not only do we have the human body, but we have come in contact with a pure devotee. We have come in contact with the devotees of the Lord who are dear to Krishna. So we'll go to this purport, to the last paragraph of 29. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the eternal servants of the Supreme Lord, being controlled by powerful feelings of mercy, descend into the material world as Vaishnavas to deliver the conditioned souls who are bound by the results of their own mundane work. Such Vaishnavas also distribute their mercy to those who are laboriously searching after the impersonal absolute. Narada Muni has stated, without ecstatic love of Godhead, such laborious impersonal contemplation of the Absolute is certainly troublesome. Naishkamyam up ichuta bhava varjitam. What to speak of the innumerable problems of ordinary, gross, materialistic life? So there's the karmis and the gyanis, and he's talking how everybody's chanting Hare Krishna, and it's wonderful by distribution of this Krishna conscious movement. So Srila Prabhupada didn't have to come here. We heard a story from Bhavananda Prabhu that Prabhupada said that Krishna told him, you just go down there and write a few books. And Prabhupada didn't want to come, but he came anyway. And good for us. And so Prabhupada is this example in our modern history of a pure devotee coming down to save everyone. If you read his poems on arrival in America, he just looks out at the people and thinks it's hopeless. They'll never understand. How will they ever understand? He says, but by hearing Bhagavatam, and they can possibly. And then he quotes those wonderful verses at the beginning of Bhagavatam. The process, just starting to serve the devotee and then hearing about Krishna, they become pious. and go all the way to love of Godhead. So verse 30, therefore, O completely sinless ones, I ask you to kindly tell me what the supreme good is. Question number one. After all, even half a moment's association with a pure devotees in this world of birth and death is a priceless treasure for any man. Okay, what's the priceless treasure?
Half a moment's association.
Half a moment's association of a pure devotee. Purport, the word shevadhi, or a great treasure, is significant in this verse. Just as an ordinary man is overjoyed to discover an unexpected treasure, one who is actually intelligent is overjoyed to gain the association of a pure devotee of the Lord, by which one's life can be easily perfected. According to Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, the words ātyantikam, kṣemam, or the supreme good, indicate that situation in which one cannot be touched by even the slightest fear. Now we're entangled in the cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death, saṃsāra. Because our entire situation can be devastated in a single moment, we are constantly in fear. But the pure devotees of the Lord can teach us the practical way to free ourselves from material existence and thus to abolish all types of fear. Now, next paragraph. According to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, normal etiquette would dictate a host immediately ask a guest who has arrived about his well-being. So who is the host here? And who is the guest? Nimi is the host, and the Navayugandhas are the guest. So instead of asking him, how are you? And what have you been doing lately? He asked, what is the supreme good? That was his question. So next time you meet a devotee, ask them this question. See what they say. You can go and ask. That can be your homework for today. Ask somebody, what is the supreme good? See what they say. Tomorrow I'll ask you what your answers are. What is the supreme good? Yes. Okay, so he is asking this of his guests. Such an inquiry is unsuitable to place before self-satisfied devotees of the Lord, who are themselves the bestowers of all well-being. According to Śrīla Viśvanātha, the king knew it would be useless to ask the sages about their business affairs, since the only business of the pure devotees is achievement of the supreme goal of life. So how's business? That's for the Vaishyas. What do we ask the Kshatriyas?
How the ministers?
How's your ministers? How's your treasury? How's your army? How's your kingdom? Yes. And that was asked by, I believe, Narada Muni to one of our kings in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I know, maybe it was Narada or Parvat.
Chitraketu.
Right. Parvat or Narada? Or both? Yes, he was asking, how's your kingdom? How's your by your face I can tell something's wrong. So then, and we asked the Brahmanas, what is the highest good? What did Lord Ram, was it Lord Dasharath? It was Dasharath asked who came, Vishwamitra. He asked Vishwamitra a question. Yes, how is your progress in the path of liberation? How are you doing to overcome this path of punarjanma? How is your progress? Are you liberated? Have you become liberated? How are you doing in your liberation path? Okay, so what do we ask a Shudra? How are you? Because the Shudra thinks I am the body. So, next time you ask somebody, how are you? Or someone asks you that question, say, well, after we hear the chapter on the Hansa prayer, then we can say, which you are you talking about? Is it my body? Is it my mind? Is it me? Which you is it? Then they'll know you're reading 11th canto. You're studying 11th canto. Which you? Okay. How's business? We said that first thing. Yeah, how's business? Okay. Or how are your cows? This one just had a calf. And, okay. How's business? According to Bhagavad Gita, the goal of life is to free oneself from the cycle of birth and death and reinstate oneself as an eternal servant of God on the platform of spiritual bliss. Pure devotees of the Lord do not waste their time with ordinary mundane affairs. Sometimes foolish relatives of a Vaishnava preacher lament, such a transcendental preacher has not used his life for material business, and so much money has therefore been lost by the practice of spiritual life. Does anybody have a relative like that? That you've wasted? Yes, you have a relative. Why, you're wasting your life as a brahmachari. Your father, oh dear. Yes, for Indian devotees it's very difficult. And they put you in the school at the age of 2 or 3, then they put you in the college, and then you come out, and they expect to put you in a job, and then you will take care of them when they're old. Right? But no, not like that. Yes, even the Western parents.
Sure, my mother, my father, my brother.
Yeah.
Even today.
Even today. Yeah.
I'm over 60 years old.
You're over 60 and they still think you should go out and get a job and make money, right? Yes, that's the Western rat race for you. Yes, somebody just told me, what was it, their mother and father? Well, of course, Satrut Maharaj, his mother and father disowned him.
Me too.
They disowned you too? And Brahmananda's, oh, his mother was okay. But the father, yeah?
I phone my family once a year.
You phone them once a year?
And my brother asked me always the same question.
What was that?
So, are we marrying you this year?
What was that? Because they're going to marry you? Okay. They don't give up, do they? Yes, they just don't understand. I know, one time I was in Calcutta. I had not probably written home. Of course, you know, the mail in India doesn't reach anyway, you know, so what's the use of writing, I thought. And there was no email, and phones didn't work. And somehow they got a phone call through to Calcutta Temple, my mother. I don't know how. And I was extremely ill with high fever. And someone got me to the phone, and she said, why don't you just come home now? I said, but mother, I have work to do here. You know, they don't realize. Yeah. But Krishna, you know, Krishna takes care. She was out shopping in a mall somewhere, and somebody had a Back to Godhead magazine, and she was just looking through it, and she saw my picture in the magazine. And she asked, could I have that magazine? And then the person said, of course, but I don't want it. And then, it took me 10 years to go back to America before to get out of India, first 10 years. But anyway, that's, you know, what to do. It's the life of the devotee. You just, you serve Krishna, and the family thinks you belong to them. Actually, they think you belong to them, but actually, when we become devotees, we realize, no, I'm not part of this family, I'm not this country, I'm not this anything, you know, I'm Krishna's, I belong to Krishna. Not that we came to India and say, okay, now I'm Indian. We didn't think like that, you know, we said, no, it's my service is here, okay. I'm here, now I'm in India. It's all, the whole world belongs to Krishna. Right. So this is interesting. It's very relevant for us. I know Prabhupada had conversation. One mother was talking to Prabhupada, some devotee's parents, and they were complaining to Prabhupada, you know, my son has no ambition. And Prabhupada said, that's good. But that's not what the parents wanted to hear, you know. But he should get education, he should do this, he should do that. I said, no, it's all right. The parents, my mother just didn't understand. Until 10 days before I went to visit her, just before she left her body, I went to visit her in Radhashtami. Then she appreciated what I was doing. Then she was attracted to the chanting, attracted to the beads, because she had lost a lot, you know, some of the conditioning. When you're about to leave the body, then in your... you start losing your memory and these things. Yeah. So she appreciated. And she appreciated. So We're in the verse 30, last paragraph of the purport. Materially conditioned souls spend their days and nights discussing various topics of sense gratification. They never find time to hear about transcendental knowledge. But even if only briefly or accidentally, they hear Harikatha, topics of Krishna, and association of pure devotees of the Lord, their propensity to suffer in material existence will slacken. When one sees liberated persons, hears about Krishna from them, remembers their saintly behavior, and so on, one's tendency to bind oneself in the illusion of sense gratification is diminished, and one becomes eager to serve the Supreme Lord. So there's a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya Charamananda Rai, Madhya 8, 251. Shreya madhya kona shreya jiver hai sa Krishna bhakta shangra vina shreya nahi a. Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, out of all auspicious and beneficial activities, which is best for the living entity? And guess what Ramananda Roy replied? If you know Bengali, then you know the answer. The only auspicious activity is sadhusanga, association with devotees of Krishna. That's the only auspicious activity. According to Bhagavatam, then this verse is quoted. Yes. And Prabhupada gives his translation. We are asking you to tell us what is the most perfect welfare activity. I think in this material world, association with devotees, even if it be for a moment, is the greatest treasure house for mankind. That's Prabhupada's translation of this verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay. So, this is the question, what is the highest good? And we will hear the answer tomorrow in verses 33 and 43, but before that, we'll read two more verses. 31, please speak about how one engages in devotional service of the Supreme Lord if you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics. When a living entity offers loving service to the Supreme Lord, the Lord is immediately satisfied, and in return he will give even his own self to the surrendered soul. So just, how humble is this King Nimi? If you consider me capable of properly hearing these topics, how many of us ask a question and say that afterwards? If you think I can understand, if you think I'm capable to understand or hear, then please answer my question. We demand, we go to our gurus, we demand an answer, and we just ask questions. But it's nice. Often devotees say, thank you for the class, and like that. And, I don't mean in this class. I mean in Bhagavatam class, I'm thinking in Bhagavatam class. But yes. Please speak how one engages in devotional service. So we'll look in the purport, second to the last paragraph. There are numerous practical historical examples of this loving propensity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of the love of Mother Yashoda, child Krishna in his form as Damodar surrendered himself to his loving mother and allowed himself to be bound with ropes as a childhood punishment. So this is about Krishna expanding himself to enjoy rasa. Similarly, feeling indebted to the Pandavas for their intense love for him, Krishna, in his form as Parthasarathi, happily agreed to drive the chariot of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Similarly, Krishna in Vrindavan is always thinking of ways to satisfy the gopis, who are universally recognized as the most exalted loving devotees of the Lord. And so this is the mercy of Krishna being explained. I just took a beautiful paragraph from the purport to show how Krishna is reciprocating with his devotees. Shri Narada said, O Vasudev, when Maharaj Nimi had thus inquired from the nine Yogendras about devotional service to the Lord, those best of saintly persons sincerely thanked the king for his questions and spoke to him with affection in the presence of the members of the sacrificial assembly and the Brahmana priests. So not only was Maharaj Nimi listening, all the Brahmanas were listening, and all the members in that sacrifice were listening to his questions. And not only they are listening, but we are listening. Now in Kali Yuga, in the 21st century, we are also listening to what happened at this sacrifice billions of years ago. Any questions or comments? Tomorrow we will get our first answer to the first question. Yes.
Regarding greeting guests, also when Krishna greeted the Brahmana messenger of Rukmini, is your mind satisfied?
So here's another question to ask a Brahmana. Krishna, when he greeted the Brahmana messenger that came from Rukmini, he asked, is your mind satisfied? Because a Brahman has to be, I mean, that's the symptom of a Brahman, he's satisfied, satisfaction. It's austerity of the mind, satisfaction. Yes, a Brahmana should be satisfied.
Canto 7, the main quality of the Brahman.
The main quality of a Brahman is satisfaction. Also forgiveness, also satisfaction. If a Brahman is not satisfied, then
all the austerities leak out.
All his austerities leak out. So those of you who have second initiation, if you're not satisfied, then all your austerities will leak out. Yes? Kshatriyas. Yes. Very good example for Kshatriyas. When Arjuna returned from Dwaraka, Yudhisthira asked him many questions befitting a Kshatriya. Did you disrespect some woman, or did you not please some woman, or then there were other questions. What were some other questions? Yeah, bad character. Other questions. Did somebody defeat you? Were you defeated?
Less
powerful person defeated you in battle. I mean, if a more powerful person did, then he wouldn't be there, I guess. Is that Kshatriyas, they die, they have to die. Whoever wins, he lives, and whoever loses dies, usually. Yes.
Jaga and Madai. Physical assault, is it blasphemy?
Pardon me?
Physical assault.
Physical assault is blasphemy. Is physical assault blasphemy of a Vaishnava? It's a form of offense, yes, to assault a Vaishnava. That was, before that they didn't do anything. But once they did that, then that was Vaishnava Ninda. And then they got the attention of Lord Chaitanya. Because they did, but before that they did not, as far as I understand from the Leela, they did not do Vaishnava Aparad. They were killing people, but evidently they didn't kill a Vaishnava, so good for them. Yeah, any other? Yes, if you assault a Vaishnava, that is Vaishnava Aparad. If you're not happy by seeing a Vaishnava, that's also a form. It's mental. But fortunately, we are in the Kali Yuga, so that may be not taken into consideration, mental. It may be or it may not be. Yes?
So this was a conversation shortly before Krishna's departure in Vasudev's...
Yes. That's what it appears to be. Otherwise, why would Vasudev be in anxiety? He's heard the curse. And so this is like, it is chronological. It's not something that happened before. It's like, okay, the curse happened in the first chapter, and now Vasudeva is conversing with Narada Muni. That he's heard about the curse, and now he is conversing. So it's although the events are not going on, but there is a conversation taking place. Okay, now what are we supposed to do now? How do we get free from fear? What is our duty now? He didn't say now that the curse has come, but he said now that Krishna is going to leave, or what? That was in the back of his mind. Bhagavad Dharma. Yes. Yeah, it's about, because it's, if you study the, what is that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book on the 10, Dashamula. There's a lot of these topics here that are covered. The liberated soul, the conditioned soul, Prakriti, Purusha, Ishvara, Jiva. There's a lot of these topics covered here in that Dashamula as well. So this is the essence of Bhagavad Dharma. Presented from the Vaishnava point of view. And then we have also bhakti, we have devotional service, and we have the prayojan. We have the goal. The goal will be actually tomorrow. Actually, we'll hear a lot about the goal, Prayojan, Krishna Prema, right in our verses tomorrow in this second chapter. We'll hear about the Prayojan. We'll hear about so many things. Okay, anything else? We'll hear about, yes, bhakti and the goal of bhakti. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.